No.
Da-da-da-da-da-da, Mike Menotti Show.
No, you guys are not making this a thing.
Hi, kids. Welcome to Mike Menotti Show. Woo! Today, we got water. Woo!
It's the AJ Menotti Show, too.
No, it's not. Hello and welcome to the Exploding Barrel Podcast. This is Mike Menotti, and I'm joined by my brother, Edge Guy.
Can't say the date.
It's March 26, 2012. You happy?
It's just tradition.
I guess so. We've done how many of these we've done now? 225-ish?
This is the 226th episode.
Ooh. Okay, then.
I don't know if anyone else heard that echo or if it was just on our end, but
sorry.
That was weird.
Man, this is a terrible beginning.
Oh, keep going. It's fine.
First, I want to thank and apologize to Bates, who tried to join us this week.
Yeah, he's having some internet problems.
Just wonky. But I'm sure he's going to post his thoughts on the Mass Effect 3 ending on the squad board soon. But, what we're doing today is AJ finally beat Mass Effect 3. So, at the end of the show, like we've done in the past, we're going to do, like, the big spoiler cast kind of thing, where we'll do the outro. So, if you haven't played Mass Effect 3 or haven't beaten it, you know, don't listen, because we're just going to talk about the game in general, especially the ending, though, that you have probably all heard so much about. And if you've been following me at all, you know how furious I am.
I've been trying to keep myself reserved on Twitter, but I'm similarly furious.
Baze was trying to say, he said he went through, like, the stages of grief, and now he's at acceptance. I am not. What's the fourth stage or before acceptance? Pleading?
Bargaining, I think.
Bargaining, yeah.
Well, I think we're still in that stage.
I think that's the stage a lot of people are with. Like, they're literally like, we'll pay you. Or
we'll give you 800 Microsoft
or, no,
points.
That's not what happened. It's actually, it was indoctrination the whole time. I don't know. But
no spoilers.
It's not a spoiler.
I know.
All right. But what we're going to do is we're going to start off with the news like normal. We'll do the show. No middle segment since we're going to be doing that whole spoiler cast thing later. Then we'll talk about our week in gaming and the new releases. But let's get into the news then.
All right. So in Austin, Texas this past week at Junction Point Studios, Epic Mickey the Power of Two was announced.
Epic Mickey 2 the Power of Two.
Is that what it's actually called?
Yeah. There's a bunch of twos in there.
Well, you would know because you were there.
I was there.
So
I was at the event where they announced the Epic Mickeys.
I figure instead of just telling you to regurgitate information, I'm going to ask you questions. I figure this might be a more, conversational way of doing this.
Why don't you interview me?
Okay, so what is it coming out on?
Wii, PS3, 360. There were rumors of a 3DS version that he would not confirm at the time, but that seems to be pretty much true.
Well, it's the Nintendo Power cover.
Right, but we'll talk about that version later. But what's weird is that, so Junction Point is making Epic Mickey 2 on the Wii. And they're making that. And then the HD versions are being handled by a studio in England. I think they're called Crave. Something like that. I'm sorry, that's not very perfect. Something like that. I'm fairly certain it's Crave. Basically, they've done other things, but primarily in my mind, what I remember reading was the Burger King games. So
they're just porting. It's a pretty utilitarian
thing. It's weird because they're porting up.
Right. Well, I mean, it makes sense because
the
game started on the Wii. They're not going to rebuild it from scratch.
All I'm going to say is that your hopes that Epic Mickey 2 was going to be some kind of amazing looking visual tour de force with awesome physics engine and stuff with all that stuff. No. It played a lot like Epic Mickey 1, so. Except, the biggest difference is you kind of have this co-op element where Oswald's always with you, and he's either controlled by an AI the entire time, which seemed to work pretty good, or, second player can go in. It's jump in and out co-op, so that's pretty nice.
Just local?
Just local, he said, for now. I think they're probably going to keep it that way because it's Disney. That's kind of been how they roll. But, Oswald, it's very Tails and Sonic-ish because, he can do the whole flying thing and you jump on.
This story, too, he can't actually kill anything. Like, he could stun them, but it's ultimately up to Mickey to finish him off.
Yeah, it sounds right because Oswald has a remote instead of, a brush. That's kind of his thing.
Like, the only fear I have with the co-op is whoever's playing Oswald is always going to feel second class.
Well, maybe, but, it kind of works. Like, that was basically what happened with Sonic and Tails in those Sonic games. But
yeah.
I mean, if this is kind of for the lower demographic that I think they're shooting for.
Which way the screen split? Left and right or up and down?
Left and right.
Okay. I didn't really see any screenshots of split screen at play.
Yeah, it's left to right. But, yeah, and, you know, it's very Epic Mickey. You know, it has kind of those.
Now, explain to me, because Warren Spector is now going on and on. First of all, he admits that not having voice acting in the first game was a mistake.
Right.
Which I could have told him that a long time ago. But now, not as they're
acting.
Well,
he basically said, like, he basically wanted to do what Banjo-Kazooie did because he liked that.
See, no one else did. I feel like that was pretty universally panned.
But I don't know.
Anyway, not only is it voice acting, but now it's a musical. So, like, did you see any of that?
Well, we saw one song, and it was, like, the opening cinematic, and the Mad Doctor kind of rolls into town when there's an earthquake, and he, like, tries to convince everybody he's good, and he's like, help me, help you. I'm not going to say that it was, you know,
part of your world.
Yeah, Under the Sea it wasn't, but it was a song. So, I mean, the guy who's writing the music is the guy who composed the last game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much musical work he's done before. So, I mean, I would have been more excited if he said, like, yeah, we got Alan Menken and he's going to do the score or something like that.
Right.
But, and I don't think it's, like, going to be an interactive kind of musical. I think it's just going to be cutscenes where people sing. But, you know, it's neat that he's doing that. I guess my thing ultimately is that I was disappointed by Epic Mickey 1. And I think my problem just maybe fundamentally that it wasn't what I wanted. What I wanted Epic Mickey 1 to be was that game. With those first concept shots of, like, Monstro the Whale with, like, being a giant robot thing.
With all the theme park icons on its back.
And Spaceship Earth was on its back. It was, like, half. And it looked very dark and kind of real and gritty. Whereas, you know, Epic Mickey is pretty, it's pretty cartoony still. Which, you know, it's Mickey. It's cartoony. It makes sense in a way. Well, I guess I kind of always thought the thing was, like, it was going to clash styles more. But, I mean, besides that, you know, the Wii version ran the best by far because it's like a month further ahead in development than the other ones because they had to transfer it. Like the 360 version I played, it kind of was stuttering a bit. They're alpha builds, you know, what are you going to say?
Yeah, so, and then it's no Kinect on the 360, it's just the right analog stick.
There's no Kinect.
But there is move support.
But they do want to do move support. But, so 360, you use the right analog stick to aim, and when you get to the edges with like your cursor, that changes the camera.
Yeah, see, I feel like the PS3 one be the one to get.
Yeah,
it's kind of the best of everything.
I mean, he was going on about the camera and how improved it was.
Did you notice?
I don't know. It seems like a camera. It's still. See, his thing, he was going on about how the camera, you know, it's going to not need to be changed because, like, they did such a great job of placing the camera. But then he said, but, you know, if you're going to go look for treasure stuff, then, yeah, you're going to have to change the camera. But, you know, he does so much of that in his games. And when you do have to change the camera, it does still kind of feel like you're fighting it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of got that impression. Especially the 360 version where you have to aim your cursor to the other side and stuff like that. But a couple things I like. It's persistent what you do when you, like, erase things or build them.
Yeah, see, that was annoying. Bothered me in the first game.
Right.
Do you still have to play the 2D sections over and over and over and over and over?
I don't know. I played one 2D section and...
Did anyone ask him that? That was honestly the worst thing about that game to me. It was every time you wanted to go, like, from Main Street to Toontown, you had to play through the damn level again.
I did not get a chance to ask him that. Like, the way our interviews worked, we had a 20-minute interview, and it was, like, a round table. So, like, me and four other people had 20 minutes to ask him questions. So, and basically, everything I asked was from that, like, asking about the musical, because I wanted to know who was writing the music and why he wanted to do a musical and stuff like that. But... I'm not gonna come out here and say that I think this is going to be the game of the year or anything like that. I think that this
better is... than the first, at least. We'll enjoy it.
I guess so, yeah. I still feel like he has this fundamental problem where he doesn't want to admit he's making a platformer.
Yeah, and he is.
It's totally
Look, you have a second player character who has spinning helicopters to float more easily, and he carries the other guy. It's a platformer to the highest degree now.
Right. But, you know, it could still be good. I don't know. I didn't see a whole lot of the game. I can't judge.
Right.
Basically, I'm just talking more about how I was disappointed by Epic Mickey 1 at this point and how I'm not... I don't know how much I buy this is going to be that different or not.
I see.
But, yeah, that's it. Anything else you want to know about Epic Mickey 2?
No.
I'm really almost more excited for this 3DS version.
Well, they're drawing on the heritage, at least by name, of the Genesis games.
Castle of Illusion and World of Illusion?
Something like that.
Yeah. But those games were great, and and the people making this game are the people who made Henry Hatsworth, which I loved. Mm-hmm. That's a great 2D gaming caliber right there, so that's kind of neat. All right, so that's enough about Epic Mickey 2 then.
Who just breathed?
Oh,
that's me.
What?
Yeah, Beige is back.
Back from the dead on a better connection.
Well, yeah, what are we talking about now?
Oh, I guess I should get my list out so I know what the hell we're talking about. Next on the agenda, vamp. Oh, come on, I just have this open. Yeah, there it is. Oh, Prey 2.
Oh, my God.
What's going on?
What? Okay, so...
A few months ago, twice actually it happened, where there were, like, these rumors that Doom 4 was canceled, and Bethesda was like, bam, no, it's not. Fuck you guys. Like, immediately. So then these rumors of Prey 2 start swirling around that it's been canceled, because, like, they're supposed to have a GDC event, it got canceled a couple weeks in advance, and then just, they started blowing up, and, like, 2 days later is when Bethesda's like, we don't comment on rumors or speculation. What the fuck?
Don't cancel Prey 2. Please.
I wanted to play this game so bad. Ever since you came back from E3 raving about it.
It looked amazing. It looked like one of the coolest games. Because it was basically, you know, the bounty hunter game that everybody wanted. Basically, you're a human on, like, this alien city. And, like, people are like, go bounty hunt this person. And you, like, have to, like, go and, like, find clues and get information and, like, intimidate people or buy information. Then you find the guy. Then they, like, run away. Then you have to use, like the example they showed, like, you had an electric lasso that you could use to get people. And you use it on this guy, but this guy is a teleporter, like a short-range teleporter, so it didn't work on him, so you had to keep chasing him. You know, just...
So it was like Assassin's Creed plus Mass Effect without any trace of the original Prey.
Pretty much. Like,
Tommy,
you know,
showed up.
I guess Tommy's supposed to show up. Like, maybe... I'm hoping maybe they're, like... Why are we calling this Prey 2? Let's just, like,
maybe.
Let's rebrand it.
Like, yeah, that's the only thing I could think is, like, maybe they're about to drop some big megaton about the game in, like, a couple weeks, and they're just, like, saving it.
What worries me is that, you know how the rumor why Doom 4 was canceled was because Rage did badly.
Uh-huh.
I hope they're not so stupid as to say, no, we're not going to cancel Doom 4. But, yeah, we'll cancel Prey 2 now because Rage didn't do good. Which would be infuriating.
That would be the worst.
Because the problem with Rage was that it looked like a zillion other first-person shooters.
Well, it was post-apocalyptic, and we'd already had, like, four of those.
Right. Whereas Prey 2, well, yes, it's sci-fi. We have sci-fi shooters. It's doing things that I have not seen other shooters do.
Yeah. Any video game do. Except, yeah. Like you said, maybe Assassin's Creed.
It's not even, like that. It's different. There's this really cool way, like pulling out your gun actually meant something. Like, when you pull out a gun on somebody... Like, they were, like, intimidated, and they reacted completely different to you, you know? Like, you just didn't always go with, like, the gun on the bottom left of your screen. Like, you're just walking around. But, I will say it right now. If this game actually is canceled, this is going to be one of the biggest disappointments in gaming history. I think a lot of people won't know it because they maybe haven't seen what I see. But, man, it would be a shame. Big time.
You haven't seen what I've seen.
I've seen some disappointments lately. But...
True.
Was that my exterior voice? No, I'd buy it, but I can't comment on it. Did anybody else besides me play the original Prey?
I played parts of it. I actually bought it for like $2. I was kind of, my plan was like, I'll play this just to get through it.
I mean, the original Prey was a fine game. There was nothing really outstandingly good or bad about it. I mean, the portal tech was already one-upped by Portal. Yeah, the no gravity thing in the vagina doors.
Did that really come out around the same time as Portal 1?
It came out after it.
Oh, that's pretty weird. I was kind of think of Portal.
Yeah, I think so. I think end of 07.
Right.
Like, close, but yeah, I mean, Prey 1 is not the reason I'm excited for Prey 2, to be clear.
If they really cancel Prey 2, fuck those guys. The hell with you, Bethesda. I don't care how many Skyrims you made. God. All
right. It's such an age of contempt right now.
Hopefully. First. Ugh, God.
Hopefully you will like Assassin's Creed 3.
Yeah, I think I will.
They had like an embargo lift and a big old dump of information. Some interesting things that I found out about the game. Like, for one, they kind of went ahead and said that contrary to what everybody thought, Ben Franklin is not like your inventor buddy.
They're missing a trick. I'm just saying.
Well, wouldn't it be? It's almost too obvious, isn't it?
They said it was part that and part, like, when you look at the history of the time.
Yeah, he's not there.
No, he was in France most of the time.
So I guess you really can't do it.
DLC.
You know, Yeah, so, and also, Philadelphia is not one of the cities. It's Boston, New York.
And they said the reason...
Which, by the way, I think I also called way back when.
And the reason they said Philly's out is because Philly was one of the first big cities planned on a grid. And
it's not very exciting to...
Yeah, it just didn't work.
As a game world, like, oh, yeah.
Well, Boston's cool. I saw a shot of not Ezio paddling a canoe around.
Connor.
Connor, yeah.
And then he has his mohawk.
All these nature shots look beautiful.
Oh, I know.
Oh, God, I'm excited.
But yeah, they're really going on about, like, the tree climbing and navigation mechanics. One thing that I noticed, I guess they're, like, tweaking the controls a bit. It seems like there's going to be some kind of control set. Like, when you're going at a tree branch, for example, you'll be able to decide if you're going to leap up on top of the branch or swing low under
it.
Like, I don't know how you would...
Mirror's Edge.
Like that.
Just L1, R1. Or, sorry, L2, R2.
Well, it's not as simple as that, because, I mean, you still have to jump at it, but, like, how high are you going to jump?
Apparently, the combat's being changed up a bit, so it's not quite as... Like, the problem with combat in the Assassin's Creed game before is that you're incredibly defensive. Mm-hmm. You just wait for counters. They said they're trying to make it more aggressive.
They're really pushing the idea of how snow affects things in the wintertime.
Really?
Like, it'll actually slow
they need to just
everyone
use...
down. That's why it benefits you to be up in
okay.
the trees and stuff.
They just need to use that Iron Song again from the Assassin's Creed Revelations trailer. Because that song was great in that trailer. But that song actually makes a lot more sense for this game. Since that song was about snow and, like, bullets, basically. Iron. But, oh, God. I'm excited for this. Okay, I feel a little better now. What's next?
This one's for me, because I'm excited about it. I don't know how much you care, Mike. Mark, you might. CCP, the guys make Eve Online, had their big fan fest
for
Dust
514.
Yeah, they showed a lot more now of how the two games integrate. There's this great video shown where, like, guys playing Dust 514, like, called for an airstrike on a base, and then someone playing Eve on the same server launched the strike on this point.
This sounds way too high concept to actually be a thing.
That's what I feel like,
but
too.
But they showed
like, no
it.
One's
it worked.
Do it. I don't. Oh, I'm sure it could work.
The Eve Online community isn't going
to
do
why
it.
Why would the Eve Online community want to drop a bomb in a first-person shooter game?
Because they get money for it.
They get a lot of money?
Yeah. Well, the way the game works is all the missions you take playing Dust 514 are contracts put up by different corporations of Eve players. So they get a kickback for you winning. You get a kickback for winning.
Aside from dropping bombs, though, I mean, what are you going to do? Ferry guys around, or
mostly it's going to be deciding where battles should take place. They said down the line they'd like to get it where you can take your avatar of Dust 515 and the avatar from an Eve player and have like space stations where both games kind of meet, where you could like basically both games completely mingle in a non-combat zone.
Highly skeptical.
Highly skeptical, but, I mean, these guys are all about crazy interactions. Their economy is already insane.
The Eve organizations have already gotten guys playing Eve right now who are, like, dedicated to getting this game the second it comes out. Guys went out and bought PlayStation 3s so that they can be ready for this, so they can integrate it into their corporations.
How many people really play Eve?
A lot.
No like, one would ever accuse those guys of not being hardcore.
I'm sure
anybody's
going
to go buy a PS3 because of it.
I mean, to answer your question, it's in the hundreds of thousands, which for a single server, super hardcore MMO, they do pretty well.
Did you guys hear this thing? I don't know if it's in your news stories about people complaining about SWTOR's servers.
Oh, yeah. That there's like half as many servers as WoW or something.
I guess the problem is that despite the fact that it has like 10% of... the population of WoW, it has half as many servers. So people are saying, like, you just can't find people to play with.
Yeah, but then the converse that was 2 months ago, everyone was bitching that the servers are full and we need more servers.
When were they doing that?
People
see
this. Shut up.
Well, no, because this is a real problem now. Before, it was just the game came out and it's popular.
Well, yeah, this always, like, they'll probably do a merge or something.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Well, it's always embarrassing when you have to do that, because it's basically saying, like, yeah, the game's not as popular as we thought it could be. Do you think maybe they
Well, no. I mean, they answered the fans last time. It was like, oh, there's not enough servers. They're always full.
When were the servers that full?
Like,
there were a lot of servers.
Yeah, they were full. They were queues.
Well, some of them were probably full, and you had to go pick a new server.
BioWare is extremely responsive to fan feedback. If somebody said, I'm just going to keep doing this.
Yeah,
I'm here all night.
I forgot that this is BioWare. Oh, man. Don't defend them. They're embarrassed because they're not WoW. That's what I say.
Oh, WoW admitted, though, to a drop in numbers due to SWTOR.
Look, WoW's numbers are probably going to be on the decline from now until forever.
The next MMO that they make.
They peaked. They still have 10 million subscribers,
They said they still got two more expansions in the pipe for WoW.
Yeah, makes sense.
Sounds like a lot.
How many did freaking EverQuest have?
Touche.
if WoW had 2 million subscribers, that would be a game you'd still support with expansions. It has 10. 10 million.
Only 10?
Yeah, only
10. Down from 13.
Oh, downfall, it's dying. People are stupid. All right.
All right. Last story I got here. This just hit like a couple hours before we started recording. There's this rumor now that there is a new-ish Xbox that's going to come sometime in the next year and a half or so that is more on par with like an Apple TV and would just play arcade games and some Kinect games.
Is it in Netflix, I take it?
Yeah.
Is this for the people where their Xbox has become the Netflix box?
It would basically be an Xbox without a disk drive, far as I could tell.
I fail to see the utility. However, we're not Microsoft's target demographic right now.
If it's $100 and it does a lot of the same stuff an Apple TV does too, but it plays some games.
It's $100, huh? You know what that says to me? That's the up or downstairs TV. It's not your main Xbox.
But I have two TVs now. That.
So that's for the basement.
Well, that kind of works for you then, doesn't it? You'd probably buy one.
No, he wouldn't. I bet he doesn't. Because I bet no one will. This is stupid. And only you would think that this is a decent idea.
I know guys with three PS3s siphoned around their house in various places. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that it's a great idea, but there are lots of wives out there who just think of the Xbox as that thing that plays Netflix. And maybe kids jump around in front of it.
But like we already said, there's already devices you can get to play Netflix on your TV. Why do we need one that's Xbox branded? It can also like play Xbox Live arcade games.
Well, I'm saying, again, you have to remove yourself from yourself. Because let's just say you've got the family.
No, because I always hear this. No, this I always hear this theoretical thing where like the family is really going to get behind this one.
Okay, here's what I need to know: does it have a USB port? Because I just bought a boxy for $200 that only to play my video files and hook up to a TV.
I don't know, it's a rumor if this is even happening.
I'm just saying,
half the price of a boxy box. That is a consumer peripheral that would sell.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee it.
Do you guarantee it?
No. I make no official guarantees on the Exploding Barrel podcast. If I had a third TV, I'd think about it.
There you go.
I don't think I need every TV in my house to have some sort of box attached to it.
Of course, we kind of do right now. That's the thing.
But actually, we don't have
anything in the living room that's dedicated.
Yeah. Screw it.
All right, I'm done. I don't believe it.
You're done?
Yeah.
All right, then.
All right.
So,
Mark, would you like to give some non-spoiler overall impressions of Mass Effect 3?
Without talking about the...
Oh, you guys have asked me such the wrong question because you know it's amazing.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
You know it's a great game.
It's an amazing game.
Well, I was listening to the soundtrack today. Let me talk about the soundtrack briefly.
Yeah,
the soundtrack is so good, and Mass Effect's music is good anyway. The Mass Effect 3 soundtrack is so good that it makes me sad just to listen to it now. In a bittersweet sadness way that I hope that they want the music, but not for the reasons that music wants me to take away. Are we talking about the good parts here? We're talking about the awesome things that are Mass Effect 3?
Not even plot specific. I'm talking more like gameplay and...
Okay.
Everyone knows that stuff's good.
I know. That's why I just want to give a quick second to talk. For the people who aren't going to listen to the end, let them hear what Mark...
Okay, let me tell you a few flashpoint moments. Last night, I had to confess... I played and finished the game last night, so this is going to come up in... context. I started from about, I don't know, 3 hours from the end and wrapped it up. And that included things like getting your romance completion for the first time. Having a really well-written and touching moment with your partner right before, you know, you have to head off to the war. Lots of good speech making. Mm-hmm. Lots of good, like, backslapping and we'll get there comments with your squad mates. You know, like real fist pumping stuff, you know. There was an attack on a facility that was like super great. Lots of, you know, well written BioWare stuff. It's the kind of game that I've been when I haven't been working 10-hour days, I've been excited about running home and trying to finish. I mean, you guys know this. Mm-hmm. It's an excellent first-person shooter. I've even been enjoying the multiplayer, though I feel kind of silly for doing that now. But, you know.
That's one thing I think I could address here real quick. That didn't matter at all.
It was a lie.
It was.
But
but anyway, okay. So you like the game overall.
Oh, yeah, I like the game. I paid for
overall.
The N7 edition. I waited a couple of days for it to come in from Amazon. You know, got my robot dog and my hoodie that I never wore around the Normandy.
Oh, I did, because I have that hoodie. So it was super fun to me to see Shepard wearing the same hoodie.
No, it's just too incongruous. It's like wearing that, Village People vest Han Solo combo around. Like, you just, it's not professional. I can't condone this.
Yeah, it was funny in certain scenes, particularly toward the end, when I'm just, like, kicking back in, like, my hoodie and jeans, and everyone's, like, walking around.
I can tell you, like, they really nailed a few moments. Like, there was the moment when I had to let down my romance from Mass Effect 2, Miranda. And if you do that, then bad things are going to happen to Miranda later in the game, and there's nothing you can do about it. That's a BioWare decision. So I think I managed to get through the game losing about 6 people from the original roster, 6 or 7, something like that. And the way that it played out, I'm sure that, you know, this is same as you guys, was very, very individualistic. One of the things that I really liked about the whole series as a whole is that I've been able to map a sort of meta plot on top of it about how Shepard, what kind of a guy he is, how he acts, you know, how his character changed when certain things happened to him. And I found myself, you know, just continuing that naturally into Mass Effect 3, regardless of the fact that my face didn't import, which was BS.
Which is supposedly getting fixed in the next
patch.
How could
that not have been?
I know, that still cracks me up.
That's ridiculous.
That should have been the first sign of trouble.
But, you know, I had to go back to the well a couple of times for, like, what would my Shepard do here? What would happen? What would he say? You know, how has he changed? I was looking at my little, the Paragon Renegade meter there, thinking, wow, you know, okay, so this is where Shepard ended up after a game and a half. And he's now 40% Renegade, 60% Paragon. And in my final speech to my troops right before the big old event, I finally gave him the only speech I've ever given in the game that was just Paragon, Paragon, Paragon choice. And then I sat back and I was like, wow, Shepard, you've changed. And that was a real cool moment. Like, I looked at that and I just thought, it's amazing that they've been able to do that, you know? And then to know that there are other people giving speeches right now where, with completely different characters in completely different setups, like, there are arcs there that I have no idea how they would play out if you hadn't imported a character all the way from Mass Effect 1 to 2 to 3, you know, just the number of times that they mentioned that my character was almost eaten by Thresher mods on Akuz back in from Mass Effect 1. I didn't expect that to ever come up. They referenced it like 5 times. So 5 or 6 times. So in general, I was really impressed with it. And I thought that it did exactly what they claim, you know, like there's always sort of BioWare magic going on behind the scenes, in that we all know secretly that everybody's Mass Effect experience is pretty much the same, regardless of how much they talk it up or down. But the illusion of it being your own is super convincing. You feel at that time, even though you know that if you went next door that 90% of the lines would be the same, you really feel like it's your Shepard. And that he's saying the things you want him to say, and he's doing the things that he wants you to do. So you take all of that, and then you add on a much improved combat system. I mean, I think that I did miss the heavy weapons a little bit, but in general, they've really got their shooting down. And the odd, you know, Uncharted, QuickTime kind of movie event happening in there, less of an emphasis on the Renegade Paragon things. Like, those really only happened here and there in little dialogue choices, and I'm okay with that. And I like the idea of, like, Mass Effect 2's structure, you know, it had these really personal character stories, and I knew that I was going to miss that going into Mass Effect 3. But I also really like, instead of individual characters, you sort of had individual race stories. So they were different species stories. So you had the Asari story and the Quarian story and the Geth story. And that, instead of this person, this person, this person, you had this race, this race, this race. And it felt to me like a pretty good trade-off. And the fact that, like, not everybody from previous games joined your party, I'm totally fine with that. Mm-hmm. Totally fine. I didn't need the Morden running around in my party to have a satisfying experience with him in the game. You know, he was there, he was doing stuff. There's, at this point, there's way too many characters in the whole franchise to be able to have, you know, everybody join the party and ram around on the Normandy. I actually like that they were diffuse and that they were all doing their own thing at different points in the galaxy.
You could probably argue there are probably too many characters in 2 in a way. So, I mean, some of them were just, like, Samara, I don't know what the point of her was.
Katsumi, yeah, who cares?
Zaid, yeah, whatever.
All right, so, we'll talk more about that later.
Can't wait.
What else? Should we talk about Draw Something?
I mean, we've been playing a lot of Draw Something. I don't want to talk too much about
it's been so much freaking fun, though.
It's been a great source of anger.
For a great summation of our experience between Mike and I playing Draw Something, just go read today's Game Stuff comic, because that is a true story.
But, well, because when I played, I always picked the hardest word.
Always. It's like, I'm like, why do you do that? Like, it's like he's playing it on hard mode.
What's the point? I mean, I'm not going to do an easy one that
so
you
know
you're
going to
get.
More coins?
Well, it's just easy if I'm going to have to draw you something like a puppy or whatever.
But it's fun to see what your puppy looks like.
No, it's fun for you to try to get the hard one that I don't even know what it is.
Wu-Tang.
Wu-Tang. Yeah. But then you had drew me a Furby without ears, which looked something
okay,
like
I'm
a Furby.
I'm sorry, I forgot
you
the ears.
You chose black and white, too, so it just looked like a
penguin.
It
was gray.
You could have made it purple. Then I would be like, yeah, Furby.
No, you wouldn't.
Yes, if it had ears and it was purple, I'd tell you what.
It said Waylo at
and
the top.
No one knows what that means.
Oh, come on.
Unless you say it in a
Mark,
Furby
Mark, did you have
voice.
A Furby ever?
No, I'm about 20 years too old for that.
Look, the Furby's very famous, so we go, Waylo.
Not that famous. Look, okay, but you see, if you say Waylo, yeah. But if you just, like, write Waylo, what do I know what that means? Coming out of a penguin. Also, like, you like had an exclamation point that looked like another L, so I thought it was Walol. Waylo. I thought they were, like, the those owls, like.
You what know, are we talking about?
Draw Something.
Which,
by the way, I guess I should mention this. Zynga bought them for $180 million.
Jeez.
I mean, my God, it's like, it's a foregone conclusion. If there's like a new asynchronous social game that comes out on iOS that they didn't make and it gets popular, within 2 weeks, Zynga will buy it.
Why not?
We need to come up with one.
A lot of money, but, So, yeah, I mean, that's been fine. Angry Birds Space has been
yes.
fun. See, God, we're talking about all these fucking casual games. But
Angry Birds Space is
It's fun, but I mean, it's Angry Birds with gravity. So it's Angry Birds Galaxy, really.
Yeah.
It's cool. I like it. There's not a whole lot to say about it.
No.
But, Baze, what have you been playing?
I've been, like I said, I've been really busy. I've been playing a lot of Mass Effect. Next week, you'll get a big rundown on Silent Hill Downpour.
Right.
I've been playing Journey. Like all y'all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Journey
I've
was
played
sweet.
It through twice.
And yeah, I guess we didn't really get your impression. I spoke for you a little bit last week. But
magical. You know, yeah. It's great. Both times I went through with buddies, I sat one of my friends down in front of it a couple of days ago and just said, play this from end to end. And he was like me. I went into it with total beginner's mind. I didn't know anything about... I didn't even know there was co-op in it. Oh. So I spent the first... Like, I thought I was playing with an AI, like Yorda. From Eco for a while, and I was going on about look at how much work they put into this AI. It's running around and doing stupid stuff just like a regular person would do. And then I was like, oh wait, no, that is a real person. I just can't interact with them in any way. So
see, I totally knew about that, and I wish I didn't, because that would have been an interesting kind of experience.
Any game that I'm interested in, I just go total radio silence on.
Yeah.
If I know that I'm going to get it sight unseen, that's the first thing that I do. So I'm glad that I did that Journey. But, yeah, I mean, what else is there to say about it? I wish there was more replayability. Like, when I went back and played it a second time, there was just guys in white robes flying around everywhere. And it wasn't the same as sort of wandering through with, a brand new guy. Aside from that, the only thing I've been playing is a game called Princess Pajama on my iPhone. Which is like a weird... Okay, it's like a weird combination of Plants vs. Zombies Gauntlet... And an RPG. You play this little guy whose job it is to run from right to left or left to right on the screen, like Jetpack Joyride or something like that. But and you save this princess in level 1, And she runs around behind you, like, delivering buffs. And you sort of level both of yourselves up. So there's an XP mechanic. You get skills. You tap the screen in different positions and stuff to execute, like, basic slashes and heavy slashes and combos, like fire attack and lightning attack and things. And you've also got a weird little summoning mechanic. So as you go, you get money from, like, basically going through these worlds. It, you know, it's got a Ghosts and Goblins style. You start at the very far left of, like, the world map. And there you progress from the desert to the forest to the caves to whatever. And there's about six to ten worlds in between there. There's a boss at the end of each level. And as you level up your guy and you level up the princess, you also level up all of these summoned creatures that you can kind of call to assist you. So it's got this, the Plants vs. Zombie mechanic starts there. So you start a level, enemy creatures start coming towards you. You have to sort of decide how best to deal with them if there's, like, big heavy guys or lots of little light guys or artillery or something like that. You'll be summoning different units, and they run along beside you and fight, and you can level them up and give them new powers and things like that. So it's kind of hard to describe, but
this sounds like just, like, a little bit of everything.
Yeah, it's a real kitchen sink of game design concepts. It's got some action gaming. It's got some strategy gaming. It's got lots of RPG, and
does it all work?
It all works pretty well, yeah. it works great, actually, and it has some weird little mechanics, like if you want just free money, you can back out to the map select screen and watch an ad at any time, and if you watch an ad, it'll give you 1,500 gold to spend on whatever you want. I don't know, it's definitely worth checking out. The production values are pretty high on it, and the little missions are like 1 minute to 1.5 minutes maximum. So it makes a perfect kind of commute fidget toy. So I'm definitely preferring it to, like, some of the more lightweight fidget toys that you can get on the iOS. I found it to be pretty engaging. I don't know if I'm going to stick with it through all 8 worlds, but it's called Princess Pajama. Check it out. That's my little review.
Nice. Wait, what is going on with your Skype?
It's just people are logging into Skype. Ignore it.
I don't like that noise.
Tough.
Why are you so mad at me?
I don't know.
If I was making noise over here of some sort, you would freak out on me.
I mean, it's not getting recorded.
I don't know it's not getting recorded, but it's bugging me.
You're bugging me.
All right, look. okay, anything else, anyone?
No, it's been pretty late for me.
Yeah.
I want to play I Am Alive. I can tell you about American Nightmare on Xbox Live Arcade if you like Alan Wake.
I don't like Alan Wake. Or at least I know nothing about Alan Wake.
Here's what you need to know about American Nightmare. It's if you like Night Springs, the whole game is set up like it was a Night Springs episode starring Alan Wake, and it's framed as one of the episodes that Alan wrote, which is kind of cool. The thing that's not cool about it is that there's only 3 environments, and they make you go through each of them 3 times. It is sort of
isn't there like a time travel thing?
Yeah, it's like a time, like the first
to, like,
time
watch
you
everything every time.
Yeah, you kind of arrive in an environment, and you have to figure out what's going on there, and then later on, Alan will re-arrive in it again with some knowledge of what's going on, and then you arrive in it the 3rd time with total knowledge of what's going on, and it allows you to sort of ace the experience. What it really allows them to do is stretch out what should be like a 3-hour game into something that's more like a 6-hour game. But if you like Alan Wake, it's cool. I thought that it's continuation of the story and its treatment of some of the material. You know, if you don't count the fact that you're going back over and over again, it was actually pretty cool. And I love Alan Wake, so I'm happy to fund any sort of stuff they do in that direction. I enjoyed it. It was a neat little time waster for 2 nights. Definitely.
Like that episode of Next Generation, Cause and Effect, where the ship always blows up and then they replay the events and they always remember a little bit more about
it. That's exactly what it's like. Just sub in shooting different types of shadow guys with nail guns. You're good.
And as a quick aside, you guys see how badly they apparently screwed up the Silent Hill HD collection?
How so, Socrates?
Like, real bad. They removed all the fog.
I thought,
what?
But the thing is, not only did the fog contribute immensely to the game's atmosphere, it covered all the seams. So there's like the scene where you're like paddling across the lake, and you could just see the edge of the water as if it were like dropping off the edge of the world.
Without the fog, what is that? What is the point? What is the point of Silent Hill?
That's just the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, man.
They re-recorded the voices for both games. You can get the original voice cast for 2, but not for 3. They're not an improvement from what I understand.
Wow.
Yeah, I was reading this list of complaints. It was pretty comical.
Oh, well.
They just really fucked it up.
Speaking of complaints, why don't we get to these releases?
Yeah.
Then we can get to some grievances. All right. Some PC game called Lucius with a creepy little kid on the front cover.
He's the son of the devil.
What the hell is this, man?
I don't know. I did not know this was coming out.
But a new Ridge Racer?
Yeah, for the Xbox and PS3.
Why'd you say Xbox?
I don't know. I just stuttered.
Xbox.
Why you gotta make fun of me?
Because you're an idiot. Ridge Racer Unbounded. Yeah, I've heard nothing about this.
This is the one where they're going to show the epic trailer, and it was just like the Ridge Racer girl, and she wrecked a car or something. I don't know. Apparently there's supposed to be destruction in it.
What, so it's Burnout? So,
yeah.
Cool.
That was awesome 8 years ago.
Rhythm Thief and the Emperor's Treasure for 3DS. I got to look into this at some point, see exactly what this is. Rayman Origins coming out for PC, so I think it's now out for everything. Tiger Woods PGA Tour 13, PS3, 360. It has Kinect support in the 360. I wonder how that works.
You're facing the TV and it just tracks your hand motion. I don't know. There's a demo. I don't know if the demo is Kinect functional.
Well. I'm incredibly skeptical. Shit. All right. That's that.
Okay.
All right. Well, if you're leaving us now, thank you for listening. Stick around though, because this Mass Effect 3. Spoiler cast is going to be pretty fantastic.
So, full disclaimer now, if you haven't finished Mass Effect 3, or if you absolutely have no intention to, you should stop listening after we tell you our website, and then you should go leave a review for us on iTunes. But if you are sticking around, enjoy this musical interlude, and then we'll come back with the goods on the other side.
But if you are leaving, you can always find us at evpodcast.com, twitter.com/explodingbarrel, facebook.com/explodingbarrel. On the iTunes store and leave us a review. It's greatly appreciated. Believe in us. We'll see you next time. Otherwise, stick around. We'll be right back. Enjoy the pretty music. Okay,
I want to talk first about the preceding 99% of the game. So just tell me, guys, real quick, just to put us in a little bit of a better mood, what are some of the highlights of the game for you, story-wise?
Oh, geez, everything's good. It depends on your shepherd.
Well, yeah, you played mostly a Paragon as well, right?
You sounded kind of mixed.
Me? Oh, no. So my Shepard's arc, I started out almost completely Renegade in the first Mass Effect. Was changed significantly by coming back from death in Mass Effect 2. Found myself softening a little bit. Took a lot of those Paragon path. You know, put my hand on the gun and pointed it down saying, son, let me tell you a little bit about regret for Mass Effect 2. And then by the time 3 came around, I was like straight up like avuncular. I was wise. I was hugging people. I was being calm. I felt like a Jedi the whole time. So, you know, I brokered peace with the Geth between the Quarians and there. What else did I do? That was a big highlight.
Well, I'll tell you, like, the scene in the whole game that was probably the most effective for me, and it depends how it went down for you, but the curing of the Genophage.
Yeah, that was my favorite part of the game, was the whole T'Chunka mission and like the stuff with Morden and Rex.
Morden died in my game. I didn't have to shoot him.
He died
curing the Genophage.
Is there any way for him to survive?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
How
Rex.
So?
Rex will die.
You convince him that the Genophage is correct, that the Krogan can't be trusted. And if you get him to back down, he'll be like, you know, you're right. I wasn't thinking clearly. I was so caught up in fixing my mistakes. You're right. It was a mistake. I'm going to go lay low. I'll go to the Crucible and help out there so that the Krogan don't know I'm alive. And we'll
really?
Just, yeah.
Yep. Or you could shoot Morden because
I watched that outcome on YouTube last night, and man, I was like upset that it was even an option.
How about that outcome where Tali commits suicide?
also disturbing.
But they're very well done. Like I said, my favorite moment in the game was Morden's kind of sacrifice and him.
Oh, I'll admit it right now. I cried.
I don't know if I cried.
I cried. I'll admit it.
I didn't cry, but I thought his scene. Gilbert and Sullivan was totally appropriate.
Right.
I love the general arc of Dr. Morden Solis.
Yeah,
and that whole sequence, the Thresher Maw attacking a Reaper.
Oh, it was great.
Everything about it was fantastic.
I loved you went to, like, the underground Krogan, like, area where you saw, like parts from their renaissance. And it's like, oh, they could, see, look, they can, like, be more than just these thugs.
Did
basically.
You guys have exactly. Grunt fight his way back from
covered
in blood?
When he came out of that cave, I was genuinely happy. Yep. It was such this euphoric feeling that you just don't usually get when you play a video game.
Yeah, and we're all a bunch of guys who finished Mass Effect 2, because all of that stuff are things that only imports from Mass Effect 2 will give you. Mm-hmm. Like, if he's not loyal to you, if he didn't make it through the suicide mission, he won't do that. Like, when it came time to talk to the Geth, I wouldn't even have any idea how that would play out without Legion in my party, because... you know, I had Legion around, and he was talking about, you know, early Geth stuff, and when you see that one Geth worker, the one where he's talking about, oh, well, this was an agricultural model, and you realize he's talking about himself, and Shepard's like, isn't that your sniper rifle? And Legion has some sort of, like, he pauses, and he says, it's very reliable. Yeah, something like that. But he's, you know, this is the history of Legion that you're getting there. I just thought it was so cool. You know, all of the stuff that they did with the characters. Like, I had to let Miranda down, like I said, and she turns away. She's got these tears in her eyes. And then later on, when it came time to, you know, when she's doing her thing at the base, and she dies in your arms, and you get this whole, like, we had something, Shepard. You know, I'm sorry. You're a better man than I ever could have been. And you're like, no, Miranda. She's like, no. You deserve better people than this. And I was just like, yes, this is exactly how this arc should have ended, you know?
Playing a Fem Shep, I was amazed, like how well this worked. Like, it worked so well that I was like, man, this had to be, like, the right way to do it. Because I did romance option with Caden in the first game. And then, like, in the second game, when you see Caden or Ashley, whichever one it is, almost regardless if there's romance or not, like, they're kind of, like, glad to see you, but you're working for Cerberus, they don't trust you, and that's why they don't go with you or anything. So, in the second game, I ended up romancing Thane. So, in this third game, it was just so perfect, because Caden gets attacked by Eva on Mars, ends up at the hospital on the Citadel. So, I'm on my way to go see him, and who's in the waiting room but Thane? I'm like, oh, this is awkward. So, like, you still, like, because Thane was the most recent thing, like, you know, you talk to him first, and you see that still kind of going. Then you go talk to Caden, and he's like, they, like, acknowledge each other. It's a little awkward. You apologize to Caden because you guys grew apart, and he, like, apologizes to you. But then Thane dies, and you kind of get to peace with that. And then you get back with Caden. I was like, this is incredible. Like, engrossed in this.
I watched Thane die and thinking, God, this would be... Like, I knew he was the tragic choice if you were a FemShep in number two. But I was watching it going, like, this would be so much worse if he was your romantic interest. You know, the whole prayer thing, which I thought was amazing.
That was perfect. Yeah, that was
so, again,
so well done.
There's an example of a thing where it's like, I know that I'm not the only player that is... getting this, but it feels like my Shepard here. Right. I got back together with Ashley, and I had to choose, you know, Miranda or Ashley, and, you know, I had to actually go back to that point in time where, you know, Shepard thought that he was going to die in the suicide mission, and, you know, I just picked the least damaged girl on the ship that wouldn't take it so hard if, you know, some of us didn't make it back, and then having to break it to her, they just did this great thing, and then at that point, the writers are like, nope, she's scheduled for tragedy. Because you are not continuing with her, she's going to die horribly later. You're not going to get a chance to warn her about Kai Ling, and it's going to be tragic. And not only that, but other characters in your crew later, like Tally's going to come up to you and be like, I'm sorry that, I know you guys had a thing. I'm sorry that Miranda's dead. But being bitter as well, because she had a thing for Shepard. So there was this whole, like, she was the other woman, but... I didn't want to see her die, and let's pour one out for her. Like, just great, great stuff. The whole thing was super good. Though I do believe now, after finishing the entire series, that Liara is meant to be the OTP. with Shepard. The amount of like specific scenes that you got with Liara about the little time capsule and stuff that she was making. Did you guys get those scenes?
See, yeah, well, yeah. I romance Liara, so I thought I didn't know if those were scenes that everybody get or if that was like a romance.
I assume that they're very different if you guys are in a relationship. But I've been sitting there, especially like the last scene with her when you're
even if it's not different. The previous events color that scene differently, so it is different. Like, the lines, I would imagine, are exactly the same. Like, the death of Thane, for example, and you, like, you say the prayer. Same prayer said for me, but just the knowledge of the relationship we had completely changes the perception.
Yeah, that's what I was saying about Miranda's death, right? Like, it, on one hand, it's just a death, but at the same time, the context of who that person was totally colors everything about how that feels to you. They did an amazing job at that. So.
I want to talk about the ending. I'm sorry. Okay, wait.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Reasons why the ending is objectively bad.
Well, I want to give a little context here. Playing a game, you know, you hit the very blatant point of no return moment in the game. You have your final night with your romance partner, if you have one, which was awesome. You get to Earth. We're back to Earth. Suddenly, I can't save anymore, like, ever again. So I knew something was up there. You get to, like, this kind of dead zone. It's simultaneously, like, kind of bad, and I still liked it, where you just hit this place where nothing's going to happen, so you could literally just go down the line and talk to everybody. Which is a little contrived, but still, the conversation.
Oh, I really like that part. The thing with, like, you and Garrus being like, hey, there's this Irish saying, you know.
Man, I love Garrus.
You know, I got such a bromance with Garrus. I brought him along all the time on my stuff. So, you know, that was a big damn deal for me. That was a big moment. I've been waiting for it.
Oh, yeah. Like,
right. Because, like, well, Garrus was, he was in my party throughout all three games. And, like, I don't know, like, if the game knew that, and that's why Garrus is basically my best friend at the end, or if he... I like to think he doesn't have that strong relationship with other players, but like, yeah, like you have that talk with him where he's like, "I'll meet you at the bar."
Did you miss on purpose?
Oh yeah, that was the best line in the game.
Oh yeah,
my name is Garrus Vakarian. This is my favorite spot on the Citadel.
That was awesome.
I shot the kid.
Are you?
Well, you got a great email. I think they send you an email like, "Hey, great job showing those bottles. If the bottles rise up now, we know who to go to."
I ultimately did like it. I thought it was like a little bit contrived. Oh, sure, I was just like, let's line them up.
Throw
in a stationary gun section.
I feel like it would have been better if they didn't have like a turret in the middle of it.
Right. Yeah, I don't know whether some genius decided that. No, what we need now is some random action to break this up. Yeah.
Right.
I did appreciate the fact that the final speech was just to your friends. You know, it's not over the comm link.
Awesome.
It's not
that.
Over the Normandy. It's just your friends. No other soldiers. And it was like, this is what Shepard really, really feels at the end of his journey.
So again, everybody's on Earth with you. Let's keep that in the back of our pockets. And
remember that
we charge off. Now, we're kind of with this big fighting force, and then you and your two dudes somehow get separated, and there's no one else there. And you fight this fucking annoying fight. I mean, it's the last fight. I guess it's supposed to be hard.
Yeah, it's fine.
That's fine.
Oh, it's okay.
We launch the missile, blow up the thing.
That felt cool.
Yeah, I was digging it. I was on board. Oh, my God. It's been building up to this. I am so excited. Let's run to that blue beam of light. Shit's blowing up everywhere. This is incredible. Oh, no, I've been hit. So first thing I wake up, I'm like, shit. I had Caden, who was my romantic interest, and Garrus with me. I'm like, oh, shit, where are they? I don't see them anywhere. I've seen some videos where you do see the corpses of your squad mates lying there. I didn't see them. So, I don't know. So, three husks come running at you. You shoot them in slow-mo. You walk forward a little more. Out pops Marauder Shields.
Marauder Shields, the greatest meme to come out.
Who killed me the first time, believe it or not. He
should have let him.
He shot me to death 5 times, that motherfucker.
So,
the final boss of the game, Marauder Shield.
So, you go up the fucking elevator.
Or the beam.
Okay, so this is where we're not past the point of breaking it entirely yet. Yes, somehow Anderson got up there first. You happen to land in the one hallway that took you right to the control panel.
Lucid, like, Man is there somehow.
Yeah, like, whatever. You know, whatever. So, you know, I talked him down. He shot himself. Very echoing Saren in the first game. I can dig it. The scene with Shepard and Anderson sitting there talking to each other where Anderson dies was amazing. I loved it. It was such a great kind of period on their relationship.
Yep.
Yeah, again, you know, there's no way they could fuck this up, right?
Yeah. I'm like, oh, that was pitch perfect. You know, what a great way, like, to end this kind of father-daughter relationship I had going there. Awesome. And then I even loved it when Hackett radios into Shepard. Shepard's response is, I mean, you're lying there half dead. And her response is, what do you need me to do? Yeah. Like, it's just so cool. You're like, your character is so selfless at this point that it makes you feel good. You're like, yes, I am this awesome hero. I'm going to do whatever it takes, no matter what. I'm going to go up this elevator and see what's up there. So here's the fucking kid from the beginning of the game. And that kid, I thought, was very well done in the beginning of the game. When I played the demo, I was like, oh my god, this is amazing. So they don't even have the courtesy to at least do the contrived, we have chosen a form that is most comforting to you. Like, they know we know the cliche because it's such a cliche at this point. So, there's a quote out there from Dr. Ray Musica where he literally says, you know, all your decisions are going to build up to this amazing possibility of conclusion. It's not just going to be A, B, or C. I am then presented with a green shaft of light, a red reactor, and a blue control panel.
It is literal fuckingly A, B, and C.
But the thing is, even at this point, given the choices of synthesis, control, or destruction, I racked my brain around it. I sat there for 5 minutes because every other choice I have ever made in a Mass Effect game, from the littlest things in the first game to things I was doing 10 minutes ago, have had massive repercussions. And this had to have the biggest repercussion of all. And nothing was a clear-cut good decision. I mean, the destruction sounds like the best, except that would kill the Geth, and I just spent all this time saving the Geth. I didn't want to do that. So after thinking, like, oh, shit, what do? I picked the blue explosion. Which color explosion did you pick, Mike?
I picked the green explosion.
How about you, Mark?
I picked the green explosion.
Okay. So no one got bullshit. Unfortunately, okay, we all missed out on an ending.
I want to stop you right now, because okay, I want to describe what the scene was like on my couch at 11 last night when this happened. My wife and I are both totally on board. We're both totally watching this. Starchild shows up, starts talking. Lynette stands straight up and goes, what? This is stupid. And I'm like, no, this can't be it. This can't be it. And I'm playing, and it's stupid. It's stupid.
Well,
and here's the thing. I was ready. I was ready. I had every barrier up in front of me because I knew that they were going to hit me with something that I wasn't going to like because of the community's reaction. I had my stone face on for Shepard dying. I had my stone face on for, like, bad whatever. I did the thing I did not expect was this mixture of incredulity and total, like, bemusement, like big O underlined little O, and indifference, right? Because they sidestep you right into Deus Ex, and you're like, this isn't Mass Effect. I'm not playing that. This isn't the game I was playing. What is this game? I don't care. It's not about this. It's not about, like, synthetics versus organics versus whatever. Where did this come from? Who cares? I want to back up now and go back to Mass Effect. And I stood looking at those three things, and Lynette said, well, what do you want to choose? And I was like, I don't know. I don't care. It doesn't matter.
They're all unappealing decisions.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I don't care. And that was the part that blew me away. I was ready to get angry, but I was not ready to look at it and go, I just don't care because I have no dog in this fight because it means nothing to me because all of this is bullshit, right? I don't care.
But here's the thing. When faced with those three decisions, I said, okay, clearly I'm going to die. That's fine. So now I'm just thinking, how is this going to affect my friends and loved ones in this universe? I don't fucking know. We don't really get to see.
Sure you do. The Mass Effect relays blow up, so that destroys all life in every system where there is one. And even if they don't die somehow, all faster than light travel is gone. No one can get home. The Krogan are stuck on Earth. The Quarians are never going to get back to their home world. Rannoch, right? Everyone's going to starve to death or bleed out in the sky, and all communication will be gone forever. And let's not even talk about Joker and Edie, and etc.
Before you even get to that, again, because the synthesis ending is apparently little different from my controller.
Well, all you get is Joker and Edie hug, right?
Yes, you guys got that. Here's what I got. Again, let me reiterate. Garrus and Kaidan were with me when we all got blown up. Their bodies were nowhere to be seen. The rest of the crew was on Earth. We saw them. We talked to them. Joker was presumably in the fight. The mass relays start blowing up. All of a sudden, we see the Normandy partway through a mass relay jump. Okay, so Joker decided to leave. All right. The relay catches up. He crash lands in some garden world. Joker steps out of the Normandy. Stepping out behind him is Kaidan, followed by Garrus. What the fuck?
Okay, well, here's my
where
thing.
Did they come? How did they get
here's
there?
Here's where I want to get to earlier, where... I really do think this. I know, everyone say everyone's subjective. You know, it's artistic, whatever. No.
That's
the
just wrong.
No, listen. Here are reasons why the ending is objectively bad. Plot holes. That's a big one. Like we said, blowing up the Mass Effect relays destroys the entire solar system that it's in.
We learned this from the Arrival DLC for Mass Effect 2. It's in the game. It's canon.
So, if it's a different explosion or whatever, you didn't explain that. Second off, no matter what... They're destroyed, so there's no fast and light travel. So,
okay. Like you said, every race in the galaxy is stranded at Earth.
So the main point is, no matter what you do, with all the talk of decisions, your story, blah, 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 bullshit, no matter what happens, the game ends with you destroying galactic civilization.
Yeah.
Which, what?
And don't forget Grandpa Sagan, who comes out at the end and looks up into the sky and says... Tell me a story about Commander Shepard. Oh,
what a bullshit way to try to turn it all of a sudden into it's bittersweet. It's not bittersweet. There's nothing bittersweet about it.
And the final slap to the face is that goddamn dialogue box.
Right when you beat the game, God, Commander Shepard's a legend. Buy DLC, please.
Ugh.
Okay, so here's the point where I'm going to say indoctrination theory is awesome.
Here's the thing with the indoctrination theory.
Okay.
I want to believe.
Hey, before you do it, there's two more points you need to make before we get into this. There are, despite them saying 18 different endings, there's six. There are six endings.
There's really three. Maybe even really just one.
But let me explain the six. If you're good, you get either a red, blue, or green explosion. And during the red and the red one, the Reapers fall over. The green and blue ones, they fly up. If you're bad... You get either a green or blue explosion, Reapers either fall down or go up, and Big Ben is destroyed. If you're really bad, then the Earth gets blown up. And I watched that ending, its entirety. There's nothing to indicate that what you're about to do, in addition to destroying all synthetics, will also engulf the Earth in fire. And then, if your EMS was high enough, after the credits, you'll see Shepard wake up, presumably back on Earth, going,
but that's only in the destruction ending.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that right now.
All right,
okay,
let's do this thing.
Let me say, because my wife and I were walking to work this morning, and we were discussing this ending. And so it's time to talk about indoctrination theory.
It is. Go ahead.
All right. Now, I said, I was raging. I actually dreamt about Mass Effect last night. I dreamt about a writer's meeting about this. And I said to her, this makes no fucking sense. The guys who wrote this game were on 99.9999% of the time, and suddenly they lost their minds? That does not make sense. Something is up. And I said, how many of us believed that a confrontation with Harbinger was going to be the final conversation? He was on the field. He descended. Harbinger was there. He's Shepard's nemesis. You know, screw the elusive man. It's the Reapers. And I said, all I wanted, they could have, I just wanted a button that says, push this button, Reapers die. But somewhere along the way, I wanted to be able to look up at Harbinger and have that conversation. So researching indoctrination theory today, doing a little read-up out of it. So we should just, I don't know. There is very, very strong evidence to suggest that everything from the moment when the beam hits you on the ground, that the bridge of bullshit in between there, the point where you were struck by the beam, and the time that Shepard wakes up on Earth going, on the destruction ending, that is that conversation with Sovereign. That your mind versus Sovereign mind in an indoctrination...
Harbinger, sorry.
In an indoctrination one-on-one. And there is plenty of evidence. If you go through the... I linked you guys to a video earlier today.
Yeah, we watched it.
Right. And it goes through it piece by piece by piece by piece. And for my mind, I mean, maybe I'm just Fox Mulder and I want to believe. But for my mind, there's too much... it is too much of a coincidence that all of that stuff is in there and that it's just gamers grasping at straws really wanting to believe. So, that said, and, the article, I read an article somewhere along the line that said, like, if, you know, what that is that's a big Hideo Kojima-esque thing. It's a fourth wall breaker for the player. They want you to have to mentally resist indoctrination in the first person as it's happening, right? That is why you can't even choose the destruction ending unless your galactic readiness is high enough.
No, but that's the thing. From what I understand, you get in a situation where destruction is the only choice you get. That's what I don't understand. I saw that ending play out where the guy was so renegade that the only option he had was destruction. The other two bridges didn't even lift.
Right. My galactic readiness was off the scale. I did not get...
Yeah, and I got all three.
I did not get Shepard taking a breath at the end there. I got...
No. I didn't either.
I got Shepard with his blue eyes, his indoctrinated eyes, walking out into the green world. You have the synthesis is Saren, control is the elusive man. Both of them are the villain. You're both falling into the trap of one of the other villains. And like that video said, if you just abstract it away so that it's not Anderson and it's not the elusive man. It's Shepard's Paragon half and his renegade half in his mind. That scene where Anderson says, God, I'm so tired. Yeah, that's Shepard saying, I'm so tired. And once you put yourself into that phase, that is a fucking brilliant twist. And all they would have needed to do is have the game, is have Shepard, if you chose the synthesis or whatever endings, game over, you get your bullshit thing. But then when you choose destruction, when you choose to blow up the Reapers anyway, and that's the player resisting indoctrination, etc., etc., Shepard picks himself up, dusts himself off. That would have been amazing. It would have been stuff doing things that nobody's ever tried to do with game storytelling before.
If this is right, if this whole indoctrination theory is correct, where the fuck's the actual ending?
Right, so here's what I want to talk about next. So I went all through all five stages of grief over this today. Thinking, how could this have happened? How could this have happened? So let me give you my theory, and you guys tell me what you think. So regardless of what anybody at BioWare will tell you right now, the people who did this is not their artistic vision. It cannot be. There's no way that they could have put this out there and been like, yep, that's the ending that we wanted, for sure. Like I said, there's too many clues pointing at the indoctrination thing, and there's too many references online to BioWare wanting to have some part near the end of the game where the indoctrination of Shepard became a really crucial element. Like, did you really think that you were going to get all the way through Mass Effect without somebody trying to indoctrinate Shepard? Hell no. Right? There's all those, his visions of the oily figures in the dreams and the plants that are there when you wake up that aren't there and all of the other things. The fact that the environment is made up out of bits and pieces of other Reaper-controlled things. Like, all you have to do is take that sort of, M. Night Shyamalan step away. However, what I think happened is that we're talking about BioWare here, and it's important to remember that somewhere along the line, they had to release Mass Effect, and some suit, without an ounce of artistic integrity, told them to ship it. And I saw a thing today. You know that thing that was leaked from one of the writers, apparently, something got leaked to NeoGAF, the one of the guys who worked at BioWare.
In the arcade forums.
Yeah, the thing.
He disavowed, and BioWare said, yeah, it wasn't him, but whatever.
Yeah, so, you know, I could see it. You know, the writer, the lead writer did this in private. It was the only part of the game that wasn't talked over with the writing team. Whether you believe that or not, I think the evidence is pretty strongly in favor of the indoctrination theory being a thing that they meant to do.
Well,
at some
point, if you need proof that the game was rushed, if you read that the final hours of Mass Effect 3 that Jeff Keighley did, the game began production in January of 2010. They wanted it to come out in the holiday of 2011, and they had to ask EA to push it to March.
What I think
the game was clearly rushed.
Yeah, what I think happened there, and this is very ironic, considering that Mass Effect's whole, the underlying thrust of like. Is it, how far would you go to save the galaxy? Would you blow up 90% of the galaxy if it meant that X could survive? So, you know, that happened at BioWare. I think that happened at Mass Effect time. Somebody said, you guys got to ship it on March when we said that you would, or we run out of money. We spent $300 million on the Old Republic. The lights go off without the billions of dollars that we're going to get from the fans if we sell them Mass Effect. And somebody said, it's not done. And they were like, it's done enough. You guys can patch the end. And they're like, well, the ending isn't quite right. Somebody said, you can patch that in DLC. That thing where Shepard wakes up, dusts himself off after taking the destruction ending, you know, looks up at Harbinger and is like...
Oh, by the way, quick aside, I looked. The breath... You always get it if you choose destruction. If you get the elusive man to shoot himself, you need 4,000 EMS. And if you have to shoot him, you need 5,000 EMS to get that ending with the green or blue explosions.
I had a pretty high EMS. I don't know why I didn't get that.
Yeah, I didn't. The reason why I don't think you get it is because I'm not saying... So here's
telling you, that this is it. It's not. It has nothing to do with indoctrination. It's just if your numbers are high enough, you'll get that breath if you didn't choose destruction.
Here's where the indoctrination theory goes off the rails, okay? So I think that they meant to do that. They did not... They meant to have the indoctrination theory be a big M. Night Shyamalan thing. They did not mean for that to be the end of the game. I really feel that evidence to show that it was deliberate, but too much mishandling to show that it was what they wanted. So
yeah,
I think, because if
there is something released post release, like a DLC that has Shepard wake up, he gets the crew all converge on him,
and they said
he gets them all in the Normandy and says go, and then you have some kind of encounter with X. That destroys the mass relays in a way that's explained that doesn't destroy the galaxy, and that's how they crash land on this planet, I could kind of buy it. I might even forgive everything
It's easy for me to imagine them doing that. Like Shepard wakes up, and a whole bunch of people are standing around him, and he's like, I just saw this crazy kid. And Liara says, did you see oily figures? Did you see this? Did it whatever? And Shepard's like, oh my god, I think I was just about to be indoctrinated. And they're like, did he make you a deal? Did you see some awe-inspiring presence that told you to do this thing that sounded really close to what the Reapers wanted you to do? And Shepard is like, yes, that's exactly what happened. There you go. The problem is, and like I was talking with Lynette about this, if they wanted deliberately to do that M. Night Shyamalan thing, they would have alluded to it earlier. They would have had like Kai Lang walk past a scanner that did not beep when a indoctrinated person went by, and then they had the VI says indoctrinated presence detected. And at that time, I always thought, oh, he's talking about Shepard, right? The one that we're talking about, the crucible, the linchpin thing. As soon as they said that back on the homeworld, I was like, Shepard's indoctrinated. And then I didn't think about it again. However, it makes perfect sense. But I think that they had it all set up, and then somebody said, no, no, that twist ending that you want to do, as of now, that is the canon ending, and you're going to ship it like that. And people were like, but no, and they said, no, no, that is the canon ending, and the rest of it you'll put on with DLC later.
I mean,
the game goes out the door.
in some ways, it's almost the only explanation, because there is a lot of setup for the indoctrination theory, but
there's too much for it to be coincidence. But it was so absolutely mishandled.
But it doesn't excuse the fact that they didn't finish the game.
But the point is that if the indoctrination theory is real and that is like the ending of the game right now, then it would have been explained. If you have a twist ending, there's a point where you have to say that, yeah, Bruce Willis was dead.
Right, and so when
you don't have that moment here, so then there is no twist ending. You just have an ending that's stupid.
Is that they could not, they wanted to do that, and they had all the assets in place to do it. They had recorded the voices, they did the cutscenes,
well,
or whatever.
Well, shit, let's dig this disc apart. Right. We found fucking Javik on it. Right.
The problem now is that because they went out, in a magical world, let's say that Mass Effect had 3 more months of development time. And in that amount of time, there was enough time for the guys to bolt on that ending we're talking about, where Shepard opens his eyes and the audience goes, oh my God, he was indoctrinated the whole time.
Basically exactly what they did in KOTOR.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've done this before.
Right, and the community, if nobody had ever played Mass Effect before, if 3 had gone out the door with this part finished, would you have looked at that scene the same way, or would you have looked at it and gone, wow, he was indoctrinated the whole time, and he just came through it? It was that, part where Potter talks to Dumbledore.
I'm not gonna lie, it would have been amazing. If in the real world, the game played out exactly as it did, and then went on for 10 more minutes with all this stuff of, oh yeah, I was indoctrinated, I beat it, now let's go fight the Reapers.
I beat it.
And there was ending X.
You can tell that they wanted you to beat it with your own mind. Like, they wanted you to have that Kojima moment.
But here's the issue. Mass Effect 3, the third game in established series, is at the end of it, in the last 5 minutes, is not the time to go Kojima.
Right, but this is what I'm saying.
If that's the case, they broke their established voice.
My theory is that they didn't have... they didn't have a choice. This isn't how they wanted it to go. And this is why you've heard nothing.
If they had to scrap something, they should have said, well, shit, we can't do this crazy twist ending we wanted to do. Let's just do the straight ending. Why do the ending that is almost assured to piss everybody off?
Did they really not think
people were going to react so violently?
I know, that's the thing. Did they seriously not think that we would not go, what the hell, it's 3 different colored explosions, there's no closure, and we just destroyed everything, and it makes no sense.
I think maybe in the lead writer of BioWare's private dreams, he hoped that on the internet people would twig onto the indoctrination theory thing and go, wow, this was a great twist.
That they progressively tried to make more and more casual. You can't do that. If that was what he wanted, then he fucked up.
Well, there's no question that the ball was dropped, right? And that what EA was doing is damage control. I think that some suit really did not understand the emotional contract that the players had with the game, right? They thought that if you just release this, it'll be an ending. Then we'll patch it later in DLC. Everything will be good. We'll all breathe a sigh of relief. And, I honestly, somewhere on the other side, I'm seeing this almost dialogue wheel where some suit is saying to EA, look, either you ship the game now or the lights go off. What's it going to be, Shepard?
See, it's very tempting, and I want to just say, well, this is EA's fault. And when you say suit, you mean, EA.
It could be BioWare. Yeah. Somebody who had to make that quality call instead of finishing it to just, hope that this did piss the fans off, and then patch it later.
With every, in the end of that indoctrination theory video, there's if to disprove the indoctrination theory, you have to answer these questions. And you can't answer them logically, but you can answer them by saying, rushed, plot hole, bad writing, or things like that. There's that whole thing where the ending was just written by the lead writer and Casey Hudson and nobody else, and they didn't let anybody fact check them. Maybe the rest of the game would have been this batshit crazy and stupid if they didn't have this team of writers there to help them. Also, for them to they defend the ending, Casey Hudson does anyways. Nobody on the actual writing team does, except for the one guy from Penny Arcade who came out to blast the ending. So maybe that's telling. But for him to defend the ending, kind of like the way he does, it annoys me in a way. And the way people defend the ending, because like I said, I think it's objectively bad.
Yeah, no, it's what I want to be clear here on this podcast. Is that the way that they handled the indoctrination shit, while conceptually an amazing idea,
right,
was so totally mishandled that you can't point to it and be like, no, this is what was really going on and it was awesome, because if that is the case, then they just Halo 2'd it, right? They just
right.
stopped
Without the
story.
Of Halo 3.
They just stopped the story without an ending. And then at the very, very late, at least, the very least offense is that they're going to try and sell you the true ending for
and that's the,
extra money.
Let's have a hypothetical. If the quote-unquote true ending comes out as DLC and it costs $10...
That's going to be shit.
What the
you
hell?
Thought the
what kind of PR does... Yeah,
you
thought people were upset about paying $10 for a character... $10 for the ending that should have been there?
That's my other thing. So many people say that we can't criticize their ending because they're artists. First off, the whole artistic integrity thing you kind of throw out the window when you were charging for characters. Second off, just because you're an artist doesn't mean you're not, like, susceptible to criticism. Or that you can't do things wrong.
And can we just say, too, I have been so disappointed in the way the gaming press has been talking about.
Yeah, it's been pretty bad. Destructoid especially, man, it's been terrible. But a lot of people...
Everyone who reports this, and I gotta say, some of my own friends, like online, who have not played this game, are just jumping on Twitter saying, oh, you guys are just upset that Shepard doesn't ride off in some space unicorn into the sunset with
and
his girlfriend.
I've been trying to tell him from the beginning, that's not it. Look,
no, I think it's great that Shepard dies at the end. That's a cool thing to happen.
I think everybody
it happened in Fallout, and I loved it there.
There are a lot of sad or bittersweet game endings that people like a lot. There are plenty of examples of that. If they did that right, people would be fine with it. Here's what it comes down to. Would it have been so fucking bad if you were good in the game, you got a good ending where you saved Earth and all the Reapers died. And if you were bad, like...
Yeah, isn't that the point of having a game with all this choice?
Like, would it have been that bad? Would it have been... Seriously, would it have been right. that bad if I saved Earth?
Again, I'm pointing to the original intent of what that indoctrination sequence was. You know, they did not intend when they were first producing that for that to be where it ended. And
see,
some...
Too, like
I said, somebody stuck the ending and forced them to do it.
But even when you look at Dr. Ray's statement that he put out, you know, he's like, you know, I stand by our artistic decision.
Right. And if
you
consider
you know, we understand you don't like it and we're going to listen to the good feedback and criticism.
If
like, I don't buy it.
If you consider that is if we're talking about indoctrination stuff, if you consider that they're going to remain true to that artistic portion of it, that's what, and I think there's a defense there. But if you don't go that route, if you're just like, no, there is this Star Child and he makes you blow up the Mass Effect things, that is just bad art. And it's so bad that I cannot believe that the guys who wrote the rest of this series would have done that. It smells too much like a rat. It is
well, here's the thing too. I just thought of this. If we're going to go by indoctrination theory, meaning that in theory the correct ending picks up literally at the end, then why is it that the save game that I get at the end of everything is set before the final mission? So does that mean that not only will this DLC come out and possibly cost money, but I have to replay the last hour of the game?
Probably.
Yeah, I can't defend the indoctrination thing as a legitimate ending. You know, I love the idea of the final boss battle with Harbinger being in your mind and it being a bit of a mind fuck on the player and that what was really going on there was a fight between Harbinger and Shepard. That's amazing. However, even when you resist indoctrination, then the game has to do something. It has to pick up afterwards. You can't, and anybody who defends the indoctrination thing online, you know, like, so he was being indoctrinated, so what? Then,
exactly.
Then the game isn't over. It's cool, but the game's not over.
Otherwise, it would be like ending the Lord of the Rings, where you see Sam and Frodo going to Mount Doom, they toss the ring in the fire, then all of a sudden the next shot is Merry and Pippin, with Sam somehow, watching Mount Doom explode from the Shire.
Right.
Like,
now
that is what this is analogous to.
Right, but if you're looking at the indoctrination angle, all of that, those weird visions that Shepard have make sense. You know, it's
no,
always
I mean,
your love
interest. I'm not, like,
it's always
I
your
agree.
Love
I
interest
think...
that you see escaping.
Yeah.
It's always like, Joker. You're hoping that Joker is escaping in his mind. He's seeing stuff happen. He's hearing the voice of people go like, oh, that Shepard, he really did the right thing. All of that makes sense. You know, especially the weird, like, how did Anderson get there? How did the elusive man get there? Right. All of that makes sense. And it's actually fairly profound if
no,
that
I
is in fact what's
happening. I agree that it makes sense. But I, like I said, if this is right and there's supposed to be more, then fuck them for not finishing.
Yeah, well,
whoever's responsible, not Bio, like I don't care if it's BioWare, EA, whoever is at fault for this, needs to die in a fire.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they literally have potentially hamstrung and ruined the greatest gaming trilogy in history.
Yeah. So the reaction that my wife had and that I had, that is the most telling. Where on the couch, we both started like shrieking, "This is stupid." And basically said, like, I do not want to play this game. This isn't Mass Effect. This choice doesn't matter to me. Where did it come from? Like, I do not want this. I don't, I'm okay with Bittersweet, but none of the themes that were explored, none of this whole, you know, together we are stronger thing, all of that just goes right out the window. It feels very Deus Ex, the kind of choices they make, but I'm not playing Deus Ex. I'm playing Mass Effect, and I don't want it. I want to go back to that point
like said,
right
I mean,
before.
And the bottom line is, no matter what, like, there was no resolution
well, yeah.
with
let me
anything.
Just say, my Shepard, full Paragon, it was very much full-on Star Wars, right? No matter the odds, you can overcome whatever it is. The suicide mission, I didn't have anybody die. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's fine, because to me, it's like a space opera. It's fine. We're all flying through. We're all going to have adventure. And then, all of a sudden, my last three choices in the game are between forced control... Okay, slavery, maybe? Number two, like, this synthetic, this weird sort of Nazi notion that everybody must be the same in order to get along. Or three, genocide.
Right, so...
Where's the option to tell the Star Child to go fuck him?
The only way that makes sense...
Yeah, where's option four? Where's D? It's like, well, we'll just take our chances, screw you, and...
The only way that it makes sense is if you frame it as a non-literal thing that's not really happening. As a conflict
how
between...
How bad is that?
But yeah, but see, that's what Lynette was saying, is that if you're going to do the twist thing, your players have to realize that you're doing it. Like you said, Mike, you can't do the Sixth Sense without the reveal of, like, and now he was dead all along. And you have that montage of, like, Bruce, nobody ever talking to him and nobody ever looking at him, and everybody gets to go...
It doesn't work if I have to watch like, a 20-minute like YouTube video after the fact.
It's like the thing in KOTOR when you find out you're Revan
maybe,
and it flashes
back. Maybe
that's
what it is. Maybe because that moment, that twist works so well, they feel this need to live up to it.
Maybe.
I don't know. But like I said, I think they would have just been a million times better off. Because let's not forget what happened here. Like, there was the poll on BioWare where, like, what do you think about the ending? 90% hated it.
Yep.
90%. That is crazy. That is not mixed feelings. That is, wow, did you guys mess up?
And not even just hated it, but today when I was thinking about Mass Effect, I've been such a champion of this series forever. I'm so invested in Shepard. And now when I thought about, my wife and I have been talking about going through playing with a friend of ours as a FemShep to see how it was different. Even the thought of that now, looking back on it, it's just like, no, I don't want to. Because
what's
it's so... And no, neither do I want Mass Effect Lego or Mass Effect other spin-off games. I don't want Mass Effect movie. The guys who said, like, franchise killer were right. And
yeah, so
I think...
I have no interest anymore in any of this.
Yeah, and I think that their decision, whatever... This is why, again, I'm imagining that it must have been a thing over at the studios where, like, they're like, either you release this or the whole thing dies. It's a real, you know, irony. It's a galaxy. You know, is it better to save a portion of the population or all of us to die, right? So it had to be something like that, right? Because they must have known that the damage to their brand in the long term from doing some stunt like this would have been way bigger in terms of dollars than what they could have recouped. And there's no way that the guys who were smart enough and talented enough to put this together for the last 3 years would have done this without knowledge of the consequences. There's no possibility of that in my mind. It's not like we're surprised. Oh, you don't like the ending? Uh-uh.
They claim to be surprised.
Oh, well, in public they claim that.
I hope so.
In public.
But then there's people defending them. Like, there's so many stories defending this thing.
I know, that's like, well, I was listening to Weekend Confirmed Friday's show, where they had a non-spoiler discussion about it. And first of all, I believe at least Jeff Cannata had not finished it yet. And they're going on and on, oh, everyone's just upset that you know, it's a sad ending, blah, blah, and now we got to go make them change the ending because we're complaining to the FTC. Okay, yeah, the guy going to the FTC, that's a little extreme. And I'm not saying...
That's one guy, and
here's
of a sudden...
the thing. A, I'm allowed to say I think it fucking sucks.
Yeah.
B, I don't particularly want them to do anything outside of their plans for post-release content. Do what you're going to do, but you know what? How about you just explain it? If you guys think this ending was this artistically great thing...
See, it's already a failure. You can't do anything to change it. If you have to explain the ending, it already failed. They failed. I'm just saying, it's over. I know.
But I, at this point, just for my own edification, I wouldn't mind if Casey Hudson released some statement where he says, all right, look, let me explain why the Normandy was partway through a Mass Effect field jump. Because we did not do that in the game.
There's only one way that these guys can save it, in my mind. There's only one thing that can save the brand. And that is for them to come clean and say, we did it this way because of financial pressures or whatever, which, let's be pretty clear, that's not going to happen. But if you fully did that, if you did a full disclosure, you'd have your fans' attention. And then if they released a fix the way like we're talking about it for free, I think people would take them back. I think they would look at it and
then,
go,
like,
they made the...
Even that's like, could you imagine, like, oh, you sold the game back? Sorry, you better go buy another copy so you could see the right ending now. Like, I hope this, if that's the case, God, I hope that the backlash from this sends a message to every publisher and developer out there, don't try this again. Finish your fucking games.
There's some sort of hubris there in that this is the company who knew that they could squeeze the extra $10 out of us for the extended edition. You know, which they did successfully from me because I loved it so much. Reaching for that extra $10 a little too far, but I hate to see Mass Effect be the one game that will demonstrate this point.
I know.
You know?
Of all the games.
Like it had to take the bullet.
You know, of all the games, like it had to be the best one.
And then the thing that bothers me is the other 99% of this franchise is so good.
But you can't trip at the finish line.
I know.
Everybody who says like, oh, well, the ending should just be taken at face value and it's just about how no matter what you do, you're going to fail anyways. You know, the pessimistic assholes who think that any sort of thing like that is automatically artsy and beautiful. Go fuck yourselves. Just shut up. You have no idea what you're even playing.
No, you said. Just the other thing, too, is even if we're to take all this indoctrination theory stuff as presented...
It's gone. It's broken now.
It's not knowing your audience. It's like I told Mike this earlier today. It's like taking someone to go see Transformers, but then replacing the last 5 minutes of Transformers with the last 5 minutes of Inception and expecting them to A, understand it, and B, like it.
Yeah, no, it's inexcusable in its current state. There's no artistic defense for it. None. Right.
And like I said, and I just wish the gaming press would acknowledge that and quit writing stories about how we're all a bunch of little crybabies who didn't get our happy ending. It's really pissing me off.
You have to realize that the gaming press, a lot of them hate their audience. Yeah, and they're very bitter about where they even are right
now.
None
of them want to take the Occam's razor approach, right?
I haven't seen anyone
do it.
I want
to hear Bailey.
It's business driven. It was a business decision. It was likely because of this, that, and, you know, KOTOR, and the, you know, they needed the money, you know, it was done. Everything makes perfect sense. You can line up all of the dots. I can have the detective moment where I walk around and show them how it was done, how the crime was committed. But with behind this whole veer of artistic, you know, defense, people are missing that aspect of it. They're missing the... where the real smoking gun is, I think. I don't feel like anybody's discussing it. There's too much evidence to show that, you know, a murder did take place there. I think a good blog post could be written on
subject. 90% of your audience hates the ending. You did something wrong.
Yeah.
So,
I'm actually going to have to go hear Exploding Barrelers.
I was going to say, I think that about wraps it up.
Our thoughts are clear.
I could still yell.
I don't feel better.
Basically, they blew it.
Yep,
they did.
Someone
at some point, be it an artist or a businessman, blew it.
It's it's historical.
Yeah, if Casey Hudson really wanted to write the ending that everybody would remember forever and ever, and would talk about forever and ever.
Mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished. Yeah.
Yeah. People are talking about it. Let's talk about how much you blew it.
All right.
All right. Well, all right. I guess.
EBpodcast.com.
God. I could go on.
And here's the thing too. Real quick aside. There's been a lot of people who haven't even played the game who are like, oh, yeah, you guys can't complain about the ending. Please don't do that.
Yeah, just shut
educate
up.
Yourself. Please. I beg you. Please.
I mean, I guess no one listening to this did, but man, that has been getting annoying. We're like, it's been a lot of artsy parts of people. Like, the instant people are like, we don't like the ending. They're like, no, it's art. You can't change it.
No, it's not. It's bad.
You know what? Maybe okay, sorry, but the whole is game art argument. I've never been a huge proponent that it matters a whole lot. I think it's just a lot of people who are very insecure about the fact they play games trying to validate it more because it's art now. Whether it's art or not, it is definitely a product.
Yeah.
And as a product...
When you got a character for $10 on day one, it's a product. Yeah, congratulations.
All right. Thanks for joining us.
Yes.
Thanks for helping us bury Mass Effect.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And the rest of you...
See you next week.
See you next week. Hopefully no more franchises will be ruined anytime soon. Bye.
Bye.